Hello, guys, and welcome back to another episode of Listen to Less. Today, I am so excited for today's episode because we have a special guest today. We have Marissa Kymielek. She is a binge eating dietitian nutritionist, and we're going to talk about overcoming binge eating today. And I'm super pumped about this episode. You're going to bring, like, when we had our little discovery call, I left and I was like so energized because I was just excited about what we were going to talk about. So welcome. I'm so excited to have you.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here and have the opportunity to chat about this.
Yes. Yay. Okay. So let's just jump right into what we're going to talk about today. The first question being, for those that either they have no clue what binge eating is, or just to put some like definition behind it, what exactly is binge eating, and is it considered an eating disorder?
Yeah, absolutely. So binge eating in and of itself is just a behavior of really over consuming food in a short amount of time, but it's accompanied by this feeling of losing control. As a human, we will all overeat sometimes, right? The pie tastes a little too good. Those chips mm-hmm. are just, you know, a little bit mindless. And it happens because we're human beings. However, binge eating is different in a sense of the associated feelings that come with it, and most notably, losing control. Sometimes you may not even really be conscious of what's happening until afterwards, and it's a repeated issue. It is part of a clinical diagnosis of binge eating disorder. However, the behavior existing alone doesn't always warrant a diagnosis, even though I do think it's largely underdiagnosed. And even in saying that, it is the most common eating disorder. And yet, majority of my clients come to me without a diagnosis, and they are the verbatim like diagnosis definition right there. And so, yes, it is considered an eating disorder. There's just more specific diagnostic criteria in order to get that diagnostic title. But regardless of if there's a diagnosis, it is still definitely a pervasive issue that deserves help. And so that's why I do what I do to hopefully help those people who struggle with it.
This is a question that just popped into my head that we didn't discuss before, but when you have people come to you with the behavior, whether you think that potentially they could achieve that diagnosis or not, do you think it's important to seek that out? Or do you feel like it's not necessarily important to have that label because people kind of get stuck behind a label?
I don't think it's always necessary. I'd say majority of the time, I wouldn't say it's necessary. I rarely ask clients to go to like their primary care provider to get a diagnosis of sorts, mostly because if they know that they need help, I'm just so glad that they're here and they deserve the help, whether or not they get an eating disorder diagnosis. Yeah. I also know that a lot of my clients who are in larger bodies may get stigmatized against in their doctor's office to where, if they got that diagnosis or not, there is a lot of bias surrounding it because they're in a larger body. And so sometimes that might not even be a benefit to them if that's the sort of environment they have in their medical setting, which of course I talk with all my clients about how to advocate for themselves in that setting. However, I don't think it is necessary to have the diagnosis, but there are some people who feel more validated in getting that, and I understand it.
Yeah, for sure. That makes sense. So everybody that I talked, I shouldn't say everybody, most people that I interview and that are in the health space, they've come to their niche because of a personal background. Do you have a personal background, if you don't mind sharing briefly, yes, with binge eating?
Yes. Yes, I do. So, oh man, dating all the way back into high school, that's when I kind of first became most aware of like my body image and wanting to look like others, and just the way I was being perceived was something I wanted to have in my own control. And so I started dieting. Mm-hmm. Of course, when we start dieting, it starts so innocently, but it can be a slippery slope into disordered behaviors, which is what happened with me. At the time, I was pursuing acting, actually. Being a dietitian is not my first career. I was full-blown pursuing acting out in Los Angeles right out of high school.
Wow.
And it was a great experience for the most part. But also, as everyone can guess, that environment is not the nicest when it comes to how you feel about yourself. Mm-hmm. And so that just made it worse. And I got stuck for years in this chronic restrict binge cycle, always vowing to start over on Monday. This time it will be different. I just need to be more disciplined. But then inevitably I'd find myself binging. And it got to a point where once I was really frequently, pretty much daily in this like binge purge restrict cycle, I hit a rock bottom moment where I was like, enough is enough. I'm so sick of this. My life is consumed by food. Instead of studying my lines for an audition, I was in the library reading nutrition books, because if you've ever dieted and gotten into disordered eating, you know your brain becomes obsessed with food in all different sorts of ways, to where I was reading cookbooks even, right? And I just found myself just getting so distracted by food to where it actually like took me away from my passion for acting, and it was all consuming. And I mean, obviously the binge behaviors are just miserable, and I was so sick of it that I was like, okay, screw this. I'm not going on another diet. I'm going to try to figure out how to get help. And just kind of like call back to when you asked if you need a diagnosis. My lived experience with trying to get a diagnosis was that like I wasn't taken seriously. And so then there's the other side of the bias when you're in smaller bodies, which, yes, there's not really stigma around being in a smaller body. But my doctor looking at me, seeing that I'm in a straight size body, they were like, oh, well, you look healthy. And
you don't fit the picture. You know?
Exactly. And it was incredibly invalidating to where I even started to question, do I really have an issue? But I knew I was so miserable that I needed help. So I actually kind of had to figure it out on my own and look things up online and read books like Intuitive Eating to try to piece together how I can just stop binge eating for good. And I'm very grateful that, you know, I was able to do that on my own, but it was so hard and so confusing. And so through my recovery from binge eating and healing my relationship with food, I realized like nobody should go through this alone. Nobody should feel the way I felt when they finally decided to get help. And so that's why I left LA, went back to where I grew up in West Virginia, and went to college to become a dietitian so that I could do this work that I get to do today. So that's what led me here.
We love the hero's journey.
Yes.
So for those that are listening that they're like, okay, maybe like sometimes I binge, but like, I don't really know if that's classified as a binge eating behavior, even disordered. Could you give some of those, what those behaviors look like that you find most of your clients struggle with?
Yes, absolutely. So it would be behaviors like not just eating more than a serving size of Oreos, but eating the entire container in one sitting. Or even if you forbid all of your off-limit foods, you know, all the foods you deem as quote unquote bad from being in your house, you still find yourself reaching for the stale rice cakes in the back of your pantry and even over consuming on those. So sometimes it's not even about the type of food. But largely it is us turning to those more highly palatable foods, not just because they're highly palatable, but because we are deeming them so off limits. We're creating such a guilt and a shame around consuming them to a point where they gain a lot of power over us. And so, those behaviors can be like eating an entire container of Oreos in one sitting, going through peanut butter every time it's in your house. Things that are associated with like sneak eating, hiding wrappers. If you've ever experienced hoarding food, like even growing up, experiencing trying to hide candy in your bedroom or under your bed because there is this sense of it's scarce. And so I need to almost hoard it to make sure it stays available to me. Those are all very clear signs of binge eating. There are subjective binges and objective binges. Objective binges are where you eat the whole Oreos in one sitting in a very short period of time, accompanied by those feelings of losing control. Subjective binges are when somebody has a very disordered relationship with food to where they associate any bit of eating outside of the parameters they place on themselves to be a binge, meaning they eat the three Oreos instead of two and they go, wow, I've binged. Or they want a salad, but they get a sandwich instead. And they think the willpower to not get the salad means that they've binged. And that's not necessarily a binge. Doesn't mean that that mindset with food doesn't require help and doesn't deserve help. But that would be more of a subjective binge where it gives you those feelings of like guilt or shame. But objectively, you're not in that binge state.
Okay. Can I ask you about another behavior? Would this be considered binging if, like, you grew up and food was scarce? So now as an adult, you can't throw anything away. You have to, like, clean out the fridge because that was, like, a learned behavior. Like, oh, I'm not used to having this. Like, I can't let it go to waste. Would that be considered binging?
Yeah, 100%. So with my clients, when we talk about some of the main reasons we binge, one of those is mental safety and security with food. If there is a lack of safety and security with food, and that can be literal, like you're lacking resources to get enough access to food, like living in a food desert or having food insecurity, growing up with that. But it can also be more of in a controlled sense, like you are dieting and you've created really strict limitations to what you do allow. So technically those foods are still scarce and insecure. It's just more of an intentional versus unintentional experience. But yeah, absolutely. Growing up with food insecurity, or even just growing up around the narratives of you shouldn't be eating that, or, you know, mom's on a diet, and so these foods are bad, or the clean plate club, like you have to finish your plate, like any sort of conversations and narratives around that can create some unintentional food insecurity as well.
Yeah, I know we talked briefly about the you better eat your whole plate at dinner or else you can't get up from the table. And I think I've shared on the podcast before a little bit about like how if I didn't finish my dinner, I had to sit there until everybody else was going to bed. And if I still wasn't done, then my parents would put it in the fridge and I had to eat that remaining meal for my breakfast. So it was very much ingrained in me of like, you finish your plate. And I noticed in college and stuff when I would be like, I was getting into dieting and whatnot, I would have to finish every morsel of food. And it was different when I would go out to eat versus when I would eat for myself at home. Because when I would eat for myself at home, I'd make a serving that I could finish. When I would go out to eat, it was like my brain was like, you have to finish what's on your plate. But serving sizes are massive in American restaurants. So I was like, would leave the restaurant in so much pain because my brain was like, you have to finish it or the children in Africa are going to die.
Right. Like, as if our, loop. Yeah, as if we can pass our plate off to anybody who like needs it, right? Our own food waste doesn't inherently impact anyone else who is struggling with food security. Absolutely. That sort of clean plate club, it can in twofold, like create this disordered dynamic with food where on one hand, you're completely ignoring your body's own signals. Like you experience like going to restaurants where you finish it anyway, even if you're full, you have to finish it because clean plate club. And then there's also the dynamic of like, you have to finish your vegetables before you can have dessert. So now we're creating this dynamic of we have to earn our dessert and we're likely still going to overeat because instead of like just eating the amount that we need at dinner that feels good and having room for dessert, we're kind of overeating. We're already stuffing ourselves on things like vegetables because we have to finish that before we can have dessert. And then we're eating too much in the end anyway, because of course we still want the dessert. And so, you know, that's a narrative and kind of a unintentional rule that becomes created that really disconnects us from listening to our own body. And that can create a lot of those disordered behaviors that can lead to binge eating.
Yeah. I think this is a good segue to talk about you have made a post or two before about how like intuitive eating might not work for somebody that is kind of recovering from binge eating or has these behaviors. Do you want to touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So like I mentioned in my story, intuitive eating actually was a big part of what helped me heal. And what I see a lot when somebody is first presented with the idea of intuitive eating is there's this idea that it's eat when you're hungry, stop when you're full. That's absolutely part of it, but it's not all of it. Because if you are struggling with binge eating and I say, eat when you're hungry, stop when you're full, you're going to be like, wait, what? First of all, my hunger fullness signals are really out of whack. Every time I eat when I'm hungry, I eat until I'm uncomfortably full. I don't even know what comfortable fullness feels like. So it feels impossible. Like you really can't eat intuitively. And in a sense, you can't right off the bat. However, there are parts of intuitive eating that are about undoing things, like unlearning diet culture, working on your mindset with food, kind of overcoming the barriers that are in place to then be able to best listen to your body with trust, including your brain. Your brain is part of your body, right? And being able to do that with ease instead of by, you know, putting yourself in some sort of box of rules. So at face value, no, if you're a binge eater, you can't be a quote unquote intuitive eater. However, using intuitive eating can get you to a place where listening to your body is possible again. But that's a journey. It's not something you can adopt overnight, especially when you've struggled with binge eating.
Yeah. What are some places that you recommend people start? Like, they're listening to you. They're like, okay, I have these behaviors, but I've been trying now it's clicking why intuitive eating is not working for me, or why just like eating when I'm hungry is not working for me. Where do they start? Where do they go?
Yeah, that's a great question. So obviously you can learn about intuitive eating, read the book, et cetera, and follow that and see if that's supportive for you. But if you're really struggling with binge eating, I'd say it's about first and foremost getting to the bottom of that and then building up from there with the intuitive eating principles that work best for you. So I really think that starts with uncovering, like, what is the biggest thing behind your struggles with binge eating? So we may get there, but I'll just go ahead and start talking about it now.
Yeah.
There are three most common reasons why somebody is binge eating, what ignites that need to binge. First and foremost, are not meeting our physical body's needs, meaning eating enough, right? If we're chronically under eating, chronically in a caloric deficit, and ignoring our body's signals for more food, then, you know, our body's really smart, going to work to keep us safe. And it's going to go, oh, I need to kind of rev up my hunger here, or I need to suppress my fullness signals here. So that way we can make sure you're getting enough in, because this feels like a famine. So it's the modern day feast famine cycle begins because you're not eating enough. Then we have, like I briefly touched on, the mental restriction side of things, not having safety and security with food. So if you have a lot of rules around the types of foods you can eat, about when you can eat, about how much you can eat, if eating certain foods leads you to feeling guilty or shameful, those are the types of behaviors that can create a deprivation backlash sort of experience where, you know, you've restricted yourself of something for so long that all of a sudden it hits you and you're like, screw it, I'm going to eat it anyway, and I'm going to eat all of it. Or even the anticipation of another diet around the corner, you have this sort of farewell to food feast where it's Sunday, you're starting a diet tomorrow, so might as well get it all out of your system now. You know, those are all mental restrictions that lead your body, really your psyche, to say like, oh, okay, well, let's get it all in while we can, because this is scarce. So the scarcity leads us to wanting something more out of a safety response. And then really above that would be emotional needs. Now, a lot of my clients jump to blaming everything on emotional eating. And while in some cases that's absolutely true, we have to first consider, is there physical restriction and is there mental restriction? Because if those things are still at play, any level of emotional coping skills that you gain is not going to be enough, because your body's still going to be hungry or your body's still going to feel deprived. And so, you know, you might go, oh, I'm just stress eating, I need to meditate. Well, then you'll meditate and then you'll still binge, because it wasn't the emotion that was leading to the binge. It was deeper than that. It was a true physical need for food. Mm-hmm. But once you're meeting your physical needs and you feel free with food, then you might meditate and that actually work, because your body's not kind of in this fight or flight mode, just trying to get basic needs met. So, you know, anybody listening, if you resonate with any of those reasons, then that would kind of be the place to start, right? Like, let's meet those needs, so that way the urge to binge can subside. So that's a physical need. If you're like, yeah, I haven't been eating enough, I do feel hungry quite often, I don't really eat to fullness unless it's a binge and I get overly full, then I would start with, well, let's get to the basics of meeting my body's needs. Like, I'm going to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. I'm going to get curious to what foods make me feel full. Like, how can I actually get to a comfortable level of fullness instead of stopping myself short because of some diet that I'm on? And just, you know, getting consistent with feeding yourself adequately. And that might look different than what you've ever tried before, but it's important to get that secure foundation with eating enough. If it's the mental restriction, it would be identifying your biggest food rules. Like, if the foods you're binging on are the foods that you feel guilty about, well, that's a big indicator of something you need to work on. So how can you start to create a normalcy with them to where they're as neutral as any other food? And this is coming from someone who used to literally eat an entire box of Oreos in one sitting. I mean, that's a lived experience I have. And now they'll go stale. Right now I have chocolate covered caramels sitting in my kitchen as we speak. And I have probably haven't had them in a few days because it's, mm-hmm. it doesn't have that power over me. Cause they're just, it's just food and it's okay yeah. to have those foods, just like it's okay to have anything. So working on creating that permission and that neutral mindset with food, if you have a lot of mental restrictions, is a big key there. And then of course, if there are emotional components to that, I think the first step is really identifying what those emotions are and what you're needing in those moments. Like if it's stress, it's not just about how do I relieve the stress? It's about, if I tend to turn to food when I'm feeling stressed, what am I seeking? Am I seeking numbing, distraction? Am I seeking comfort? And then trying to meet those needs in alternative ways. It's still okay to use food, but if it leads to a binge, that's when, of course, we're like, well, let's expand this toolbox a little bit. Like, what will actually meet that need in that moment? So yeah. It's kind of a long-winded answer, but just to kind of give an overview. Yeah.
No, I think that's great. And I'm learning so much from you as well, because in my realm of the nutrition space, I mostly have been able to notice like under eating, the more mm-hmm. the physical, the first one that you mentioned, where that is constantly, I'm trying to have women eat more. And like the tale as old as time, as they're so busy, they skip lunch and then they come home after lunch and they're like going through the pantry and the fridge yes. and then they're full before they even make dinner. Then they make dinner and they eat dinner and then they're overly full because they didn't have enough to eat during the day to keep them mm-hmm. through. So I work with a lot of women in that aspect, but whenever people came to me and said, I'm an emotional eater, I never really knew like where to go with that because mm-hmm. that's not my expertise. And that hasn't usually been my lived experience. But the first one, I feel like I've known. So this is very yeah. helpful for me too, with like going into with my own clients and whatnot. What was the second one again?
The mental restriction.
Mental restriction. That's another mm-hmm. one I think like personally with having dieting history, and I still utilize tracking macros with certain weight loss clients. Not everybody. I've come a long way in my own business with that. But when I first started as just a personal trainer, it was like, everybody needs macros. You mm-hmm. like, if it doesn't fit in your macros, you can't eat it. And I struggled. That's where I noticed a lot of my own issues in college coming up was with those mental restrictions. So it's just very yeah. cool to like learn all about this. Do you see one more common than the other? Just kind of like,
I think that most commonly it's a combination of all three, but if somebody is physically restricting, most likely they're also mentally restricting. And so those two tend to go together. And I'd say it's most commonly a combination of those. But I'd say the hardest thing to overcome is the mental restriction, because we're inundated with so much information every single day on social media, even in traditional media articles, all this stuff of like what we should be eating, what we shouldn't be eating, what's better, what's worse, what's causing this or that. And so we're just, you know, we have all this external noise of food rules and food judgments that gets confusing. And so I might say, like if a client came to me and said, you know, Marissa, I can't have carbs at breakfast. Like I've been told not to start my day with carbs, and yet they're getting home from work and binging on the chocolate covered caramels. I'd be like, well, it's probably because your body is needing some carbs to start your day and it just can't take it anymore by the time you get home from work. And so now you're having these extreme cravings for carbs, AKA sugar. And so what if we introduce carbs at the beginning of the day and start to normalize that? If they were to be like, no, because I heard that it gives me this blood sugar spike and then yada, 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 like it's not good for me, the glucose, blah, blah, whatever rules that have been created by diet culture. Mm-hmm. I'd say, well, let's like, forgetting all that noise, pretending you don't know that, how do you feel as an individual when you don't eat carbs for breakfast? And what does that tend to lead to versus if you have carbs for breakfast? And there lies your answer. So you mm-hmm. can reframe it from, you know, I can't have carbs for breakfast, to my past experience tells me that when I skip carbs in the morning, I just end up craving more later. Mm-hmm. I'm allowed to eat carbs. It energizes my day and I can move on. You know, like what works for other people. If someone else says they feel fantastic not eating carbs in the morning, good for them. But I know and can trust myself that when I skip them, it just leads me to binge. And so what good is that anyway? If I'm worried about a blood sugar spike in the morning, if I just delay that until the evening, like it doesn't, yeah. like that doesn't fix anything. So, you know, that the mental side is really hard because it can be so sneaky, those rules, and they can really all consume all your behaviors. But, you know, that's a starting point, is even just reflecting on your lived experience to start building back trust with yourself.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that goes for so many things, like with social media being so popular now, there's so many diet culture, and not just diet in terms of weight loss, but what should your diet look like?
Yeah.
And all these rules that everybody's putting out there, that all these absolutes that people keep putting out there. And it's like, well, how do you feel when you do that? If you don't feel good doing that, then don't do it. Like, don't follow it. Everybody is very unique. Not everybody works the same nutritionally. That's why a ketogenic diet might have someone feeling great. And then personally, if I go keto, I feel like I'm going to die. And
same.
Like, I don't feel good. So I know I'm not going to do it, even though Joe Schmo is like, no, you're going to die if you don't do keto. Like, neither of us are dying here.
Yes.
We got to see what feels best for us. So I love that you pointed that out.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you're good. I was just going to say, and a big thing that I think is missed when it comes to like how you should eat or shouldn't eat and all this stuff is like really just, it takes you away from trusting yourself. And so you have trust with yourself to know that keto is not right for me. But I know plenty of people who don't trust themselves to where they go, oh no, that must be right because it's working for them. And that, you know, it's just a really hard thing to trust yourself when you've been taught not to.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for people on how to like start the process of trusting what your body is telling you?
Yeah. I mean, I think first and foremost, it's kind of recapping your own lived experiences of when X happens, you know, it leads to Y. So I'm seeing that, I'm seeing my body's response to that. What if we play with that to make it, you know, something that leads to a more positive outcome for me, to where I'm not binging in the evening? So sometimes even just reflecting back on the times in which your body has been speaking to you and you've not listened versus listened can show you the ways in which your body is showing up for you. And when you listen, it serves you. But a big way that, you know, I help my clients to start to build trust with themselves, is even looking at the way, looking at the ways in which in the past, prior to dieting, they've been able to trust their body just fine. So why can't they now? But also looking outward, this is the only time that I feel like it's okay to look outward, but to see the way in which people around you trust their bodies and they're just fine, right? Oh, like my, I don't know, friend from college could eat whatever she wanted, and she ate a balance of a variety of things and she was fine. So why can't I? Or like, there are cultures that thrive on carbs, like my culture of being Italian, they thrive on carbs and they're fine. And some of the areas in Italy are in the blue zone, some of the healthiest in the world, and they thrive on carbs. So why can't I? And I think just seeing that reflection of like, you are an individual, but also if someone else can feel good eating a variety of foods, why can't I? That can help you to go, okay, well, like, let's try to listen to my body and what feels good, because maybe it'll be similar. Like, maybe I will be fine eating these things and can move on. But some of it is just leaning into, I trust my body. And some of it is like practicing looking at all the ways in which your body is already showing up for you. And that's not like a clear cut answer, unfortunately, but it takes time.
But it, in the same time, like, it's not as simple as just saying, I'm going to trust myself today. Mm-hmm. Like, it is going to take time and different. It's not just a like one size fits all answer. You have to kind of like navigate the different ways that you're going to be able to find that and work with yourself. And it's going to be one of those things, when I think of like myself, where one day you might just wake up after you've been trying to work on this and you're like, how did I get here? Like, I feel like just yesterday I was struggling with all of these things. And now look at me, I'm eating intuitively. Like, I feel good in my skin. I feel confident. And you're just going to be like, wow, like I made it, I'm here. It's not going to be one of those things where it's like, I don't even know if that even made sense, but I just feel like that is the reality of it.
Yeah. It takes time. And it is true. A lot of my clients, when they're like, oh, I just feel so lost, whatever, I'm like, there will be a moment where it clicks.
Yeah.
We just have to keep moving forward. Even if you binge, like, okay, moving on. Right. And I think something that can be encouraging is that binges don't just happen for no reason. It's not because you're addicted to food. It's not because you have no self-control. They show up for a reason. When we get to the root of that reason, like the examples that I gave, then we actually have the answer to overcoming this. And your body was speaking to you too there. Like, your body binging is also a sign. Like, it's also a way your body's speaking to you. Like, hey, I have a need that's not getting met. So that's kind of cool that your body's taking care of you in that way, even though it doesn't always make sense. So we can even see that as a sign of trust of like, oh, I trust my body's taking care of me. You know, I just need to listen and respond to that to the best of my ability.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that brings us to one of our points we want to discuss is like, a lot of women think it's just a lack of self-control. And it's not. It comes back to those three pillars that you talked about. And you also brought up a great point, and I love that. And it seems so backwards, but like, your body is taking care of you. It's doing these, you're binging out of a protection mechanism for yourself, whether because you're under eating. So if you don't have this, if your body doesn't crave these things, then you may end up starting to starve yourself, because if there is no cue from your body to binge and eat this, then you're just going to continue to eat less and less and less. So it's protecting yourself in that way. If it's a like emotional need not being met, okay, well, your body is trying to give you some sort of dopamine hit or serotonin hit to keep you from being in a very low state, I assume. Like,
or even numbing, because it's scary to feel feelings, right? Yeah. Like, so we just numb to keep us safe from that experience, even though it backfires. But that can be a reason we turn to food, is just because it can numb, and it can. If we're overstimulated, overwhelmed, food can numb. If we're underwhelmed or understimulated, food can also stimulate us. It does provide a need, but then we logically can look back and go, it short-term provides that need, but long-term it doesn't. And I'm still kind of just back where I started, but worse, because now I don't feel good.
Right. Yeah. I love that. So we mentioned diet culture a little bit. Do we want to talk about some signs of binge eating or binge eating sort of behaviors that are very much normalized in a dieting culture?
Yes, absolutely. I think the first we've like kind of brushed the surface of a little bit, which is when, you know, outside rules start to make you second guess your body's signals or respond to your body's signals in ways of almost like hacking or tricking your body. So the first example I think of is when somebody says like, oh, if you're hungry, but you just ate, like just drink water. You're just thirsty. That's highly disordered. If you're hungry, you're hungry. And you know you're hungry. You know when you're thirsty. You know when you're hungry. The water will short-term make you feel somewhat full because of the just volume in your stomach. But water goes through you so quickly that once that thing is out of your digestive system and you're probably peeing like in 20 minutes, you're still going to feel this pull to food. And so your body is saying you're hungry. That's as clear of a signal as your body saying you need to pee. And so if you listen and respond to that, you know, you're meeting your body's needs, but these outside voices and rules are telling you to ignore that signal, even though it's a beautifully built signal in your body in order to keep you alive.
Yeah. That's a big one. I think it's always funny. Whenever I tell women, this is kind of like the opposite, but the same, drinking water before, if you feel hungry, I don't know what magazine that was in, but I feel like it was in some popular like Cosmo magazine, like 10 years ago, about like, if you're trying to lose weight, drink a whole glass of water before you eat your food and it'll make you feel full before you finish your meal. And when I tell women, stop doing that, it's not only like, it's going to make you feel bloated because you're filling your stomach with volume before you even eat. So then you're going to feel more uncomfortable, even if you don't overeat. And I tell women to stop drinking liquids, large like amounts of liquids with their meals. Everyone assumes, but I thought that helps digestion. And I'm like, no, it's very much the opposite. Like, it's hindering that. So stop doing that.
Yeah, of course, through the course of a day, drink enough water, and water does help digestion, but all at once, it can be uncomfortable. I mean, I know when I chug water, I start to kind of feel nauseous. I'm like, that was just too much all at once. And then of course I'm going to eat less, but just because you eat less because you've tricked your body into eating less in that exact moment doesn't mean your body didn't need more literal calories. Like, you can't trick your body into needing less calories just because you drank a glass of water. Like, the volume, sure, you might be able to only eat less in that exact moment, but give it 20 minutes and you're still gonna be hungry.
Exactly. Are there any other diet culture things that you see?
Oh man, there are lots of things. So, I mean, the biggest ones are always when it's about external things making you second guess your body. So another big one would be just simply eating by a clock. You know, you wake up, you're hungry, and but nope, it's not in your eating window. You're intermittent fasting. And there's mixed stuff out there about intermittent fasting. If anyone's listening and they're like, no, I feel really great doing that, good for you. Mm-hmm. However, if you, especially if you're struggling with binge eating, that is definitely do not do intermittent fasting, because if you wake up and let's say you wake up an hour or two goes by and you're fine, but then it's 9 a.m., 10 a.m. and you're starting to get hungry, but you go, I can't start eating until 11. You're intentionally ignoring your body's signal. This is saying to your body, hey, my signals can't be trusted, right? Because I send this signal and it's not getting responded to, and I really need hunger. So it might rev up your hunger even louder to where when you do finally allow yourself to eat, you eat a lot because you're starving. Also, literal biological things happen when we consistently ignore our body's signals to where our body is adjusting because it's you're not trustworthy, and it will start to suppress your fullness hormone called leptin. That's what sends to your brain that you're satisfied and you can just push your plate away. No problem. You're totally good. That gets suppressed where even when your stomach is physically full, it's not signaling to your brain to stop eating because your body's like, I know that when I send signals for hunger, it gets ignored. So I want to make sure I get it all in while we have the opportunity, because who knows the next time I'm hungry, if I will be allowed to eat. And so it creates this dysregulation of your appetite, not just in your behaviors with eating, but actual hormonal changes happen. Yeah. Because you're not listening and responding to those signals. So if you're binge eating, the first thing you need to do is make sure you're listening to your hunger. You can't listen to your fullness if you don't listen to your hunger. And so it really does start there. So, you know, that's a big normalized thing in diet culture that I see is as disordered as eating by the clock. Yeah. Another one, unless you have a thought on that, but another one popped in my head. Was entirely wiping out entire food groups. There's a reason they're macros. They are macro. We need all three macronutrients. We need carbs. We need fiber. We need carbs. We need protein and we need fat. Yes, we need fiber as well, but that's part of carbohydrates. But in a lot of diet culture spaces, I mean, we can glorify one over the other. There are low carb spaces. There are high carb spaces, high protein, high fat spaces. Also, like, the name a distribution of macros and there is a book out there saying that that is the answer. However, we know through so much science repeatedly that in general, we need a lot of carbs, we need some protein, and we need some fat. When we manipulate it to a level where now we're largely under eating a food group like carbs, it's just disrupting our body's preferred source of getting energy. Our body's preferred source of energy for our brain and for our body is carbohydrates. Do I think protein is important? Absolutely. But if we're not eating enough carbs, our body's just going to use that protein as a source of carbs to where now your protein's not even getting used for what you want it to be used for. So you're just making it harder to grow muscle, repair muscle, all of these different things. And now your body's going, oops, I'm not getting enough carbs. And you're going to start craving the carbs. And you're going to say, I get all these sugar cravings. What's wrong with me? Nothing's wrong with you. Your body's just saying, I'm not getting enough of this. Mm-hmm. So I think it is a big red flag if you're in any space and they say, you should be eating little to no carbs, or you should be eating little to no fat or whatever. They all have an important place in our diet for a reason. Yes, we can overdo it in any of those areas. We can even overdo it on protein. But, you know, black and white rules in diet spaces can be really dangerous. And you know, again, that just leads to really second guessing your body and trying to feed your body by a book versus by how you feel.
Yeah, I love that. And I think this is where I totally agree that, like, we need a balance of the three. There's a reason why there's a three. There's a reason, like, we have so much research on the three macros, and this is a whole different topic. But if you're somebody that you're like, you went completely keto where you took out carbs, or you went super low fat or super low protein and you feel better, and I'm talking not in a sense of it's balanced, like you just completely removed the food group, that may be indication that there's something deeper going on why you feel better, like without any carbs within your system. And I'm talking more so like maybe gut or GI related. Like if you completely eliminate protein, there may be a stomach acid issue if like you eat protein and you feel horrible. You might not be digesting it. And that's a whole other topic, but just something to consider.
Yeah. And I also will see, even though, yes, this is a totally separate topic from binge eating, but I also see a lot when people say, yeah, when I went keto, I felt a lot better. If we can investigate further about why they felt better, we might see things like, oh, prior to going keto, they were binging because of a previous restricted diet. So of course, if you then create really strict parameters and you're not binging for a period of time, yeah, you'll feel better. But if that's not sustainable and you start binging again, it's not that keto is what made you feel good. It's just that for a period of time, not binging made you feel good. It's not necessarily the keto diet. And if we know that keto didn't leave you binge free forever, then that's not the answer again.
Right.
And so it's about finding something different. So sometimes even the circumstances of what made you feel better is not about the diet itself, but about other things that have changed, right? Like if you went from being totally sedentary and then January 1st, you go, I'm going to do Whole 30. And that also includes like exercising Monday through Friday. Well, duh, you're going to feel better because you're eating more whole foods and you're exercising more. Is that because you're not eating sugar or whatever? Not necessarily. It's just because you're eating more whole foods and moving more. You know, it doesn't have to be so black and white. And so sometimes it is about zooming out and going, well, what else changed that could be contributing to me feeling good? And, you know, placebo effect is real. Not saying it's always the case, but it very much is real because I've definitely done diets and been like, I've never felt better. And then in hindsight, I'm like, I was just in this, like, I don't know, euphoria of trying this new diet, but it wasn't sustainable. I was romanticizing everything and it actually wasn't giving me what I thought it was long term. But the placebo effect short term absolutely can feel that way.
Absolutely. I love that. This is such a great topic. So next one, I know your opinion, but I want my Listen to Less gals to hear your opinion on a very popular trend in diet culture is cheat days or cheat meals. If you guys can see, she rolled her eyes.
Yes. So how I define cheat days are planned binges. It just is what it is. And if any of you are listening and you think back to your cheat days or your cheat meals, you would probably now realize, oh yeah, I was just binging, you know, eating large quantities of food, eating large amounts of foods that you normally deem off limits. I mean, that is what you would describe as a binge. It just perpetuates this idea of now or never, right? Mm-hmm. You have it, it's now or never, right? You're starting a diet tomorrow, it's now or never. And that is just a way of, controlling the restrict binge cycle. You're just restricting, you know, 3 weeks out of the month. And then for 1 week, it's all hell breaks loose. And so it is about, you know, like, why are we doing that to ourselves? So like if you could spread out over a month what you eat in that one cheat day, like it'd probably end up being healthier for you to be incorporating all those foods into your diet every single day versus all at once in one day. I mean, that's a lot on your body and it's a lot on your brain. And it just, I hate cheat days and cheat meals. It's not resetting you. It's not resetting your metabolism. It's just making you binge.
I remember my friend, she was a bodybuilder. And she was working with this coach and she had like her strict bodybuilding macros, which they're very low when you're going on stage and whatnot. And she would have one cheat meal on Saturdays for dinner was her cheat meal. And her coach, essentially, she had a timer. I don't remember if it was 30 minutes, if it was 40 minutes, if it was an hour, but I remember she would set her timer and her boyfriend would go pick up like pizza, burgers, donuts, whatever, and she could eat whatever she wanted within that timer. So then not only was she eating so like 3,000 calories in one meal, but she's shoving it down her face because she's like, I have to eat it in my 30 or 40 minute window versus what is the difference if you eat it in 40 minutes or if you eat it over the course of 2 hours? I don't know, but that's what her bodybuilder and coach had her do. And it just makes me so sad to think of that there's coaches out here that people are paying to like help them with something or achieve a goal. And then they're just instilling this horrible relationship with food. It just blows my mind that was a technique. And I'm sure it still is a technique out there with some.
Yeah. It's, outrageous, really. And what's interesting is that when I look back to the days that I did similar things, the amount of food I could consume, I'm like, oh my God, how did that even fit inside of me? Whereas now, the idea of even doing that makes me feel sick, not just not because of anything other than now I'm eating enough and all food is food and nothing's off limits and I listen to my body. But back then it was the restrict all week, binge all weekend, and your body literally adapts to where you won't feel sick from eating large quantities of food because of what I talked about where leptin is suppressed and it wants you to get in as much as possible. And so yeah, your friend that you referenced, like, their body was probably letting them get in way more than would normally be tolerable because it's like, well, this is my chance. And so I have to allow this body to be able to consume as much as possible right now. And when you just can regulate your appetite again, like, that's not necessary. And you actually are able to better enjoy those foods because you're not eating it super fast. The quantity is not so uncomfortable to where you actually just feel worse after eating it. You're able to, like, savor your food and allow fun foods to be part of your life.
Yes. I like, it becomes a point where you're maybe the one or two biter where it's not like, not out of restriction, but you're like, wow, I'm so satisfied after two bites. And you, like, don't even think about it. You're like, I know I'm good. And that is such a fun and cool place to be in, but it takes work to get there.
Oh yeah.
And of course there's still times where I'm like, I'm going to eat the whole piece of pie. I don't
know. I was just about to say that. Yeah. Like
two bites, but like having the autonomy to be able to be like, oh, that's all I need. Or like this day, I want the whole slice. It's like, it's such a cool place to finally be, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I mean, it amazes me still because, like, everyone, I've put a straw in a jar of my maple syrup before. Like, I have truly like lost my mind when it comes to my old binge behaviors, but that's just because my body took over. Like, I really didn't have my own choices in that moment because I was being controlled by diets, but my body was still being controlled by my biology and trying to keep me safe. That, you know, the amount that I could eat and the ways in which I could eat was just unreal in my current day, and not in a shameful way, but just in an observational way. But now, yeah, like, I can have some ice cream, but not some, maybe some weeks I eat a lot more than others, but it's just, it's in the grand scheme of a year, it's a lot more balanced, even if some days it's more than others. And the only difference is that now it is allowed every day. And when you just truly allow it, it's like, it loses that control over you and you can choose if, you know, you do want some one day or not.
Yeah. I love that. And this, since this episode is in the season of the podcast season two of weight loss and nutrition for weight loss, this brings back to, if you are somebody that's starting a diet to lose weight, you know, you're like starting this, you're like, I'm going to go, and the whole season, every episode's been about taking it slow and not jumping in to doing everything tomorrow. This just brings back to the point of, like, it really is more lifestyle related. And if you are trying to lose weight, I believe that it should be making small changes, small habits over the course of a longer period of time to get yourself to a point where you can eat balanced meals instead of the constant cycle of, I diet for 2 months to lose this weight and then I can do what do, like, be off the diet. But if you start to look at your life of like, okay, I don't want to be in this, I'm either on a diet or I'm off a diet cycle, and looking at building better habits around the three pillars you talked about, like making sure you are fully nourished with calories, making sure that you are, like, paying attention to your mental and emotional needs with work. It's just very, and like those restrictions and whatnot, making sure that your life is in full balance will help you to have better eating habits. And then you may even notice that weight kind of does come off naturally without trying to strictly diet over the course of maybe a year, versus trying to strictly diet for 2 to 3 months and then being stuck in this, like, I lose 10 pounds, I gain 10 pounds, I lose 10 pounds, I gain 10 pounds. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree. And while my philosophy is never in pursuit of intentional weight loss, I agree in the terms of, like, it's focusing on what would positively benefit me and how can I implement those sorts of changes instead of these drastic 180s. With all of my clients, like, right now I've been talking for a while about eating all your fun foods, eating the Oreos, eating the ice cream. Some people are probably listening like, that's not healthy. You're telling me to eat more of these processed foods. Like, how can I do that? The goal in that is to normalize the foods to where it's not every day. But when my clients get to a point where they're no longer binging, their appetite is more regular, everything is coming into balance naturally from healing. If they have health goals in any realm, we always focus on what can you add? Adding things will sometimes naturally replace other things, right? If we say, I want to add more fiber to my diet, you adding more fiber will naturally mean that you're eating less of other things, but it's not a swap. Like, oh, instead of eating, I don't know, the white rice, I'm going to always eat the brown rice. It might just be like, no, I'm going to, first of all, the difference between white and brown rice is like so minute. You just eat your freaking white rice. But anyway, if that was what you wanted to do, instead of replacing the white rice, just like add in more vegetables on the side and you might find yourself eating less rice. You might not. But that fiber is still benefiting you instead of it being this sort of like, this is off, this is on, and like black and white things that don't fit in the box. Same with like, if somebody's like, I want to drink less soda. Well, that can have, there can be all sorts of different emotional ties to soda, or like you could be reaching for it for all sorts of different reasons. If I were to ask a client, why do you want to drink less soda? They're like, because I want to drink more water. I know water is good for me. I'm like, well, what if we just focus on drinking more water? Right? Like, if we can just focus on the additive, we might find ourselves eating less of the other things or drinking less of the other things. It's definitely more nuanced than just as I'm laying it out right now. But, you know, especially if you're ever coming off of disordered eating or an eating disorder, like anything, you want to be very careful of the slippery slope of restriction. So no matter what health goals you do have, it is about going, all right, one step at a time here. What do I want to add? And then reflecting, does that work for me? Right? If you go, all right, I want to exercise 5 days a week, and then like, that's not realistic for you. It's making it more stressed, or it's making the black and white all or nothing sort of thinking come back to where you miss one day. So then you don't work out the rest of the week. And so you think, I'm going to start over next week. Then it's just reevaluating and shifting goals that work best for you, not based on like what some plan is telling you, you have to do.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest takeaways from this conversation so far is, if you're somebody that's struggling with this, I think asking yourself more questions is a big part of it, of like, okay, instead of just putting these, like, I want the result of B, so I need to put in restriction A, really dig into it. Maybe like think about like, why do you want B, and like kind of uncover those layers to see what's going on there. Of course, if you work with somebody, like Marissa, like that is, she's going to be able to help you uncover those questions and uncover those triggers and uncover the more of the psychological things behind it. But if you're somebody that you're trying to do this on your own, asking yourself more questions, listening to this podcast, and being able to identify those three pillars that she mentioned to see what is really going on behind just the, well, I want this, right, and this is my outcome, but why do you want that outcome? And kind of peeling the layers back of the onion.
Yeah. A big thing I work on with clients is something called non-judgmental curiosity, where no matter what happens, even if it feels bad, we just get curious, like you're investigating, and there's no judgment. It's just, here's what happened. I binged. Why? Right? That's not a character flaw. It's just a response that my body had to something. And now we're going to figure out what that is. Shame keeps you stuck. Like if you, after a binge, go, I'm a failure, I can't believe I did that, I should have done X, Y, or Z. Like, where does that get you? Shame keeps you stuck. But if you go, you know what, while that didn't make me feel good, I know that my body's communicating to me, or I'm doing the best that I can. What do I feel like I could do differently next time to try to help myself with an informed, you know, sort of alternative action? That's what makes change. And, you know, you're not being so mean to yourself when you're really just trying to navigate this complex world, just like the rest of us. But yeah, non-judgmental curiosity around what, you know, doesn't feel like it's going well, but also around like setting goals, like why, asking yourself why a million times, defining things. If someone's like, oh, well, I want to lose weight to be healthy, I say, define health. Because if we define what is healthy, and that's saying, you know, being able to have a balanced life where I don't feel stressed, and then what you do to try to lose weight brings you stress, then it's like, well, that's not actually aligning with your definition of health. So we want to adjust some things here. So yeah, just getting curious, like you said, asking yourself questions is a big part of no matter what health journey you're on.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's one of the biggest things that are the biggest starting points is just getting curious. I love that you said curious. I recently, I don't know if this is a video or where I heard this, but someone was like, instead of saying, well, I don't know how I'm going to get there, start saying, I'm curious how I'm going to get there. And then it kind of brings curiosity just has such a lighter undertone than saying like, I don't know, or questioning. It feels more like an interrogation versus curiosity is just like, I am curious. Mm-hmm. I do kind of want to know. Let's figure it out. Let's see what's going on.
Yeah. Language and mindset is so powerful in anything mm-hmm. you do. So even just playing with like those questions and how you talk to yourself can really show up or show you a lot of different things about your behaviors or what's going on or a certain behavior change. Even asking yourself, like, let's say I signed up for like a HIIT class because I'm like, I want to work out more. And I say, oh, I have to go to this HIIT class this afternoon. What if I said, I want to go to this HIIT class this afternoon? Right. Even just saying want makes me go, oh yeah, no, like that sounds fun. But if I said I want to, and I truly felt like I was lying to myself and I was like, no, I really don't want to, then that's just telling me that's not the workout for me. Mm-hmm. Right. Like that's telling me that's not going to be sustainable because I'm going to be like white knuckling every time I have to drag myself to this HIIT class. Like, what if I then said like, you know what? I really want to do a cycle bar class. Oh wait, that sounds kind of fun. Then there's my answer. Like I'm going to be more motivated to do something I truly want to do than something I feel like I have to do or I should do. Yeah. So even just playing with your language in that way can open up answers of what works best for you as an individual. Mm-hmm. And that just builds on that trust piece that we've been talking about.
100%. And asking yourself, like, why do you want these goals for yourself? Or is it because the internet told you that's what you want and that's what you should want?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to figure out what is actually like, what is going to make you feel good, feel happy, feel confident and love what you're doing versus like, because if you don't want to have the same goals as the fitness influencer online, then you don't have to. Just because she does, like that doesn't mean that you have to. And you're still very much worthy and valid and beautiful and wonderful if you don't live the same life as that person.
Yeah, exactly. And like we can see that and everybody's different. Like looking around and realizing, oh, everybody is different. Everybody has different needs. Everybody feels best doing different things. Like that just goes to show you like you're different. So if one person's doing something and that doesn't feel right for you, that's okay. Then you're just different and there's nothing wrong with that. Like you have to lead with trust for yourself and then, you know, filter outside things through that lens.
I love that. Do you have any last words of wisdom, places for people to start, anything that you want the listeners to know before we wrap this up?
Yes. So, man, one thing that popped in my head as we were talking that I realized I didn't necessarily say when we were discussing like where to start with different things is that other than just challenging your mindset around food, in order to normalize food, you have to bring it into your house and your life. So a big myth that floats around is that to stop binge eating, you need to remove all your binge foods. And it drives me nuts because that just perpetuates the off-limit mentality with these foods. And you're not going to be able to avoid all foods forever. Like you are going to, you know, be driving home from work one day and stop in the gas station parking lot and binge anyway. If that need is not getting met, just further distancing yourself from meeting that need is not going to help long term. Right. And so a lot of what I'll do with my clients and what I did myself in order to normalize foods in a way that, you know, creates to where they lose less of that power is to introduce them regularly. So if it's the Oreos, like we talked about, you're like, I binge on Oreos every time they're in the house. I'm like, what if you bring them into the house and have them every single day this week, right? I say, grab a couple, eat them after dinner every single day this week. You can always have more. If you binge on it, I don't care. I want you to go buy another container of it and keep doing it. So that way you're showing yourself, hey, they're not going anywhere. I can have them when I want them. I'm allowed to enjoy them. They're not going anywhere. Even if I binge, I'm not going to take them away and punish myself for that. I'm going to continue to show them that they're here and I can have them. So that way we lose that now or never sort of feeling with them. And an example that I give to a lot of my clients when they feel like, no way, like if I introduce Oreos, I'm just going to eat them forever and ever and ever, is I say, if you think food is addictive, imagine if you ate the Oreos for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every single day. Like I said, everything else, don't eat. Just eat Oreos. How long until you don't want them anymore? If it truly had power over you, you'd want them forever. But if we really, really were to do that, probably a couple days, if even, like probably by the end of the day, really, you'd be like, oh my God, I want anything other than Oreos. And that just shows like it doesn't have power over you when it is normal. You know, like you can have it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day if you want. But when you are allowing yourself to do that, you actually can make different choices because you don't actually want to do that all the time. So I just kind of wanted to circle back to that because I think it is important to tell the listeners that like to solve your binge fears, like getting over the food police voices around certain foods. It's not just about saying, okay, I just need to say like, I can't have them. It is about normalizing them, like very, you know, at first very structured normalization of them to where in the future it becomes a lot more flexible and you know they're there, but it's no big deal.
I love that. I'm so happy that you brought that up. That was a great, I think that was a great ending point.
Good.
We talked about all points. So I love that. So where can my listeners find you?
Yes. So I'm on Instagram at binge.nutritionist. I also have a podcast. It's Behind the Binge. And my website is also behindthebinge.com. So through any of those different forums, you can connect with me.
Awesome. I will put all of that in the show notes. So if you're listening and you want to check her out, the show notes will have links to all of that. So thank you so much for being here. This was amazing.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
All right, guys, I'll see you next week.